The blood had been scrubbed off the pavement where John Vandekamp died. And with the blood, the patina had been removed as well. In an odd way, the clean spot called almost as much attention to itself as the blood had. Jesse hoped foot traffic and weather would take care of that before it became a shrine to Leon Vandekamp's followers. Jesse had no desire for swastika-shaped wreaths to be laid on the spot. The weathered red door to the building next to the gallery complained when Jesse pushed it in. The building had once served as a carriage house, but the carriage doors had been removed and bricked over so long ago that it was impossible to distinguish the old brick from the new. Old or new, the bricks now bore scars from Alicia's bullets that had missed John Vandekamp. A dangling pull cord hit Jesse in the forehead as he stepped inside. He tugged on the cord, and an old fluorescent light fixture flickered to life. To his left was warehouse space where Gale and the other gallery owners stored some of their stock, unused fixtures, business records, and boxes. Much of the artwork was wrapped in plastic or draped with fabric sheets all covered in a light, downy layer of dust. In front of him was a too steep wooden staircase, the steps warped and worn shiny. They groaned under his weight as he climbed to the artist's loft above the warehouse. The ladder to the roof was right in front of him, but he hesitated. He stared at the black metal door of the loft. He could hear music, strings and a harpsichord leaking out from the gap between the threshold and the bottom of the door. He decided that whatever there might be to see on the roof could wait, but that he should talk to Mary Glenn while he was sure she was in. Jesse knocked on the door hard enough to be heard above the music. He was surprised when the door pulled back. Given the haunting painting in the gallery and the classical music, Jesse pictured the artist as a contemporary of Gale Pembroke. Mary Glenn was a nice-looking woman in her early 40s. Her brown hair was threaded with gray and cut at an angle matching her jawline. Her face was round and pleasant. Her black t-shirt and ripped black jeans were speckled with a rainbow of paint. She didn't look happy to see Jesse.
"Haven't I talked to enough of you people already?" she said,
a lot of Nashville in her accent. That caught Jesse as off guard as her appearance had. Then he remembered he was wearing his PPD hat and jacket. "I'm Jesse Stone, Paradise Police Chief."
"I'm sorry," she said, realizing how her greeting must have sounded. "That was rude of me. Come in."
Jesse stepped into the loft and could immediately see the appeal of the place for an artist. Two sets of large angled windows on the Bridge Street side of the loft filled that area of the space with tons of natural light, and it was there that Mary Glenn had seemed to set up shop. There were several easels and shelves with arrays of paint tubes, cans, and brushes. Various sized canvases, some blank, some not, were stacked and piled in a few places on either side of the easels. The wooden flooring was, like the artist's clothing, covered in drips and speckles of different colored paints.
"Pardon me, but is Mary Glenn your whole name?" "There's a last name, too, but I don't use it. How can I help, Chief?"
"Please, call me Jesse. I take it you were at home on the night of the shooting."
"I was. Look, Chief, Jesse, I've gone over this 20 times.
"How about once more? It could be very important." Mary Glenn offered Jesse tea, which he refused, but he did sit with her at the card table in the small kitchen area of the loft. After some preliminaries to help put the artist at ease, Jesse began. "How many shots did you hear?"
"I was dozing off," she said, "so I'm not sure. I heard one loud explosion that woke me up, and then I heard a lot of shots. I don't know, 8 or 9, maybe 10 altogether."
"Did any of the shots sound closer to you than the others?" Her eyes got a faraway look in them, the way people's eyes do when they're trying to picture or remember something from the past.
"The first shot, the one that woke me up, sounded louder, I guess, so that might mean it was closer. But I don't know anything about guns or acoustics."
"Was there a lapse in time between the first shot, the louder one, and the ones that followed?"
"I don't know. Maybe. I was asleep.
Did you hear anything unusual other than the gunfire? Anything at all? Was there noise on the roof or...
Don't tell Gail. But we have squirrels and rats, even raccoons and possum sometimes climb up on the roof.
She pointed at the ceiling.
Gulls perch up on there, too.
That got Jesse's attention. So you heard something on the roof?
Maybe. Things scurry around up there all the time. I mean, if I heard anything, it wasn't that different than stuff I'd heard before.
And the only window on Newton Alley is your bathroom window.
She nodded.
Yeah, it's next to the shower, but it's small and cloudy, so it lets light in. You can't really see much through it.
Can I take a look?
Mary Glenn got up and showed him the window. She was right. Even if she'd been at the window, staring down at Newton Alley while the shooting was going on, she wouldn't have been able to see much. In the dark, she wouldn't have been able to make out shapes.
Jesse shook her hand, thanked her, and told her he was going up onto the roof.
Jesse, she said, I'm sorry about being rude before.
No worries. By the way, I thought your painting of the house on the bluffs was haunting.
She smiled up at him, letting go of his hand.
Thank you.